Is it ever too late? Is it ever too late to say you're sorry? On my mind right now is that question. Because I feel that I owe Cecilia in the first grade an apology. Cecilia, if you are listening, I am sorry that I, back in 1986, tried to kiss you. Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Look, friends, this Joe Biden thing. Look, I can't believe this. I'm actually going to defend the guy. Well, no. What he's doing, what he did, all of this touching and feeling and kissing and groping and touching is weird. It's not acceptable. If he were a Republican, if he were a conservative, long ago, this would have been a giant problem for him. But understand, the only reason that it's a problem for him today in the here and the now is that the progressives have taken over the Democratic Party and they want him out of the race. That's the tagline here. That's the story. When this first came out, when Lucy Flores, the former Nevada assemblywoman who raised her allegations sometime, what was it, late last week, started talking about how during the convention there when Biden came to town and as she's on stage and he just put his hands on her shoulders and then went in for a sniff. I want to make sure I understand it right. So he smelled her hair, which, look, I'm a married man and I like women, but a woman's hair, I mean, just that's the last thing in the world I want to smell. I don't know. Anyway, so Biden sniffs her and she felt uncomfortable. Now, I think personally Biden's done way worse to other people who haven't complained. And I think that this lady, too, is politically motivated. She is not a Biden supporter. We know that. We also know that she has a history of doing this. Wall Street Journal came out with a piece a few days ago talking about her background. She's made a number of sexual harassment allegations, one even against her opponent in one of her races. So there's some baggage there. But the fact of the matter is that as long as Biden was attached to the great savior Obama as his vice presidente, I mean, nobody cared. Yeah, creepy Joe Biden. Everybody pointed to and laughed about it, and he got a pass. Joe Biden has found himself in a very different Democratic Party today than he was in 4 years ago. And he doesn't know what hit him. This thing that he put out today on Twitter, where he, well, I mean, he's saying, what is he saying? He goes, well, you know, social norms have changed. What was once acceptable clearly no longer is. I understand. I hear you, and I will give women their space. I want him to give men their space, too. I'm going to point this out, too. Nobody likes close talkers, people that get into your own, get too close to you and put their hands all over you. You just meet them. I'm a hugger. No, man. Look, just step away. So that's, that's one thing. He does it to men, too. It's weird. But he always, it was always something that he, and I think he's missing the picture. I think that this is the strongest signal that the progressives in the party are sending him to not go in the race. And it doesn't have anything to do with Lucy Flores, right? I mean, it's not the person that's making the accusation and the other women that have come forward. It's the fact that it's getting traction on CNN. Because when the story first broke, I said, all right, I need to see how this is being treated over on CNN. I want to see how it's being treated on MSNBC. And what did I find? I was a little surprised. CNN ran a full headline on it. It was, I want to say, the second item on their homepage. I wasn't looking at live coverage, but I was looking at the web. And it was the number two headline. And it was scathing. I mean, it didn't pull any punches. And I thought, aha, this is it. The knives are out for Biden. Poor Joe hasn't even announced. And they're already out to give him the shiv. The Democrats are going to pick somebody. They're definitely going to pick somebody left of Joe Biden. Because the Democratic Party has been taken over by the crazies. Read Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others of her ilk. I mean, you've got progressives running the party, and they don't want Joe Biden. So that's one part of this. The other part of it that I just need to address is that these allegations, this is where I'm going to defend Biden a little bit. The crimes, okay. Offenses, too, have always been evaluated based on the objective standard and not on the subjective one. What's the difference? Well, the difference is it's based on what we would agree as a society is not okay versus what one individual might think is not okay. And the way law is constructed, generally where good laws come from, but I'll say just even bad ones, they come from a common consensus that murder, I'll use a big one, right? Murder, we're all not okay with it, right? So, you know, we just don't want that for getting punched in the face on a street corner or assault and battery. Nobody wants that. Nobody thinks, you know, the general consensus is that that's not okay. Now, there are certain things that happen where some people are more sensitive than others. We agree on this. We know those kind of people, and we generally avoid them at all costs. But there are people who are more sensitive. And the subjective standard disregards what we as a society feel is unacceptable or acceptable and focuses instead on the very specific needs of the individual and the perception of the individual and the sensitivity of the individual, which is all fine and dandy, except when the individual is bananas, overly sensitive. Then all of a sudden, we have this total, we're always responding to somebody who is prone to histrionics, and we encourage it. And the Me Too movement here, the sexual harassment conversation right now, one of the things that is most troubling, most dangerous about, in my opinion, is we're down to discussing how he or she felt about it, right? Versus what we as a society deem to be acceptable. So inadvertently, pervy Joe Biden actually stumbled on an important point here in his message because he said, well, societal norms have changed. And I think he's wrong. It's not. Well, maybe. I think that what has changed is that we are suddenly beholden to the sensitivities of each individual in person. And we are adopting in that sense a subjective test of behavior based on what that one individual person feels. So I'll tell you, hair sniffing. Let's just go to hair sniffing. I'll give you a legal analysis of a hair sniff. Robbie, get in here. I want to sniff your hair. Well, I'm not. Don't do that. I don't want that. But I'll tell you, let's just say that an assault is harmful or offensive touching without privilege or consent. That's the legal definition of what an assault is. Now, see, I keep taking these sniff breaths tests here. I'm just practicing, getting warmed up. Now, if there's no contact, it's not an assault. I mean, maybe it's something unwanted or it's weird behavior. It's making you uncomfortable. But it doesn't fall into a legal definition. Now, this is my problem, right, with Me Too, is that a lot of these things that people are losing their jobs over and are being trussed up, and are being, you know, are being driven out of their professional fields and all the, you know, we're not looking at it from an objective legal standing of what they did wrong. Is it provable? And does it violate some kind of law or some kind of standard? And I think, you know, well, I mean, again, obviously, a very different thing is putting your – and I get harmful or offensive touching. You know, I saw what – who was it? Was it – who was this defense secretary where she, he was getting introduced by Obama and sworn in by Obama and Pervy Joe Carter, right? Is it Burgess Carter? What's his name? Anyway, he was getting sworn in. The husband's getting sworn in by Obama. And Biden comes up behind the wife and just starts massaging her shoulders and everything. I mean, and what do? You're on television. And I think finally the husband had to step in and, you know, kind of pull his wife over. It was awkward. Now she claims everything's fine and dandy. But I tell you, I think that this is, I don't know if this is a question of goalposts moving as far as the standards are concerned, but a lot of these people, women that say they're uncomfortable and men who say they're uncomfortable, there are certain things I think society agrees upon as being not comfortable and certain things that aren't. So anyway, I'm following the story and I'm fascinated by it, but Biden's just caught completely blind on this. He's still the front runner, by the way. This is an important point, just to get into numbers and what the race looks like right now. When we last talked poll numbers, I'm just going by the RCP, the Real Clear Politics average polling. Now, mind you, his poll numbers might drop a little bit now. But going into the scandal, I would say Biden's just as strong as he was. In fact, his averages haven't changed one bit. So compared to where we were in January, February, Biden back then was at 28%, almost 29%. Same exact spot, 28.8% now. And that's polling throughout March. Now, what is interesting in the race and how it is shaking up is that the second, third, fourth, fifth positions have been shifting. Now, what do you think? How do you think they've been shifting? Who do you think is up? Because I know we're told a lot about who are the top contenders. But, well, yeah, Sanders. Okay, Sanders is doing well. He actually went up in the last 2 months by about 2%. So from 19 to 21%. Kamala Harris dropped. Interesting thing, and I'm not surprised. I think she presents as a very weak candidate who, the more she talks and the more she presents herself, I think is going to lose luster and will peter out. So Elizabeth Warren dropped 2%. I don't think anybody's surprised about that. But Beto, this guy's rising. Where was he? He was at 5.5 at the beginning of the year. Now he's at 9.2. That's close to doubling your numbers. That's not unimpressive. But the guy to watch here, my opinion, every race always has a dark horse candidate, and everybody talks about them, and sometimes they break free of the pack, but oftentimes they don't either. But the dark horse candidate here is a guy named Pete Buttigieg. He's got the most impossible last name to pronounce, but it's an or spell, but there's a few T's in it, a U, some other miscellaneous vowels. And if you looked at the name, I guarantee you, if you think Berezovsky's hard, this name is atrocious. But he's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He's gay. He's married to his husband. He just came out today in the news, in fact, and said he's not sure that Trump believes in God. And I saw the headline. I thought, you know, if somebody landed in today's world in 2019 from 150 years ago, If somebody just landed and realized that there was a, he's young. I think he's my age. I mean, he's a millennial. He might even be younger than me. So this, he's a young guy. To have a presidential candidate, 37, baby. But anyway, so this guy, I mean, if somebody from the past landed in today's world and saw that, you know, we're in a country where a gay candidate can actually be viable potentially in an election, and then be lecturing the sitting president who, well, truthfully, may or may not be very religious, but be lecturing him about religion. I don't know. I don't know what they would think, but it is where we are, and let's embrace that. So, back right after this, more on the race, and of course, I'm going to get to this Mueller situation, because today was a big day, and I'll tell you all about it. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, making radio great again. Now, electionbettingodds.com, which I think historically when people put money down, things get a little more real than when polling companies run by liberals are calling random houses based on some magic formula. So this the election betting odds. I'm pleased to report that Trump has an 85% chance, according to them, of winning the Republican primary. So I have that bit of good news, if you will, depending on your position. But then in the Democratic primary, it's got 20% for Kamala Harris, 20% for Sanders. So they're virtually at a dead heat. Both of them went up. O'Rourke's down a little bit to 14.5%. Biden lost 5.5% as of today, down to 13.4, and then the rest. But Buttigieg, I have to always pause, make sure. Buttigieg, he's gone up. He's to 10.4%, and he's gone up by 10.4%, which means he was at zero. You see what I'm getting at here? That there's some movement, and as far as a early dark horse emergence here, he is the guy. So what do you make of all of this? Or what should you make of all of this? I don't know if it really matters any bit, because if Schultz, the CEO, the former CEO of Starbucks Coffee, if he gets into this race, it's over and Trump's president. And let me tell you, I saw him on Fox and Friends, I want to say, a couple days ago. He's clearly thinking about running. And also in my personal Instagram feed, he has been popping up like crazy. Let me see if I can pull this up. He's got these Instagram ads that are showing up with a picture of whatever, you know, some Americans. And half of it has a filter of red and half of it has a filter of blue, and it says, you know, why pick a side if you can be on our side, right, or something to that effect, and it's basically attacking both Republicans and Democrats, both the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump people. He's making a case, and it's a great case. It's very seductive, right? A very appealing case for, you know, managing from the middle. And I'll tell you two things about it. One, it doesn't work. And even Trump, who essentially ran on a similar platform as an outsider, yeah, Republican in name only, and intended, you know, to be a disruptor, I think has been to a large extent, still has found running against gridlock, you know, trying to achieve what he wants to achieve with the gridlock in place in Congress, virtually impossible. So one, it's just a pipe dream. But two, and this is key, people find this seductive. People are, most people are, by virtue of their feeble humanity, non-confrontational. This is true. And people do, I think, right now, look at the, I know Trump is, every time somebody comes after Trump, he pulls out a flamethrower. And it's awesome for me, right? I'm a political junkie. I've followed this forever. And I've always just been furious at all the pathetic Republicans that just take it every time the media and other, you know, Democratic operatives attack them. So I love it. But as I talk to people who are not political and I talk to people who are, you know, sort of wishy-washy centrists, they don't like it much either. And I think that Schultz would be very appealing. I think he's very serious about running. And I think it, but I'm telling you, what he would do is he would suck. He's not going to take away Trump voters. Trump voters are going to go for Trump, and guarantee you the pivot that Trump makes come election time, it's not even a big pivot. It's just anything that he didn't achieve, any promise he didn't fulfill, is Paul Ryan's fault and Nancy Pelosi's fault. And that's going to be his shtick. And I think it sells. It's essentially truthful. So so along comes somebody who's a centrist, and they're going to pull away Democrats. And why? Because the Democrats have gone full. They're going to go full far left field on us. They've fully embraced socialism. So this, against this backdrop of insanity, the more left, I guarantee you right now that Schultz is looking at what's happening to Biden. And he is saying, that's it. The Democrats are destroying their best candidate. And now there's an opening for me. And I think he might do it. So when we come back, let's dissect this just a little bit more. Also, did you hear Trump's already taking a dig at Joe. Poor Joe. I'll play that for you when we get back. Sam Rojofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, fighting dilatory obfuscation as perpetrated by left-wing hacks. Someone's got to do it, and I'm here reporting for duty tonight. So here is Trump talking to the Republican National Republican Congressional Committee's annual spring dinner, and a lot of this speech was relatively extemporaneous. You know, Trump was making all sorts of little quips, and this is what he said about Joe Biden.
We have to make a decision, theme for the next campaign. So we've been here by that time three and a half years. We're going into the war with some socialist, and it looks like the only non sort of heavy socialist. He's being taken care of pretty well by the socialists they got to him. Our former vice president, I was going to call him, I don't know him well. I was going to say, welcome to the world, Joe. You having a good time, Joe? Are you having a good time? But we're going to be running against somebody who's going to go as far left as possible.
And this is right. And you can almost hear the glee in Trump's voice. Because when you look at these candidates, Sanders, O'Rourke, right? Beto, Booker, Klobuchar, Kamala Harris, certainly. They're all fighting each other for who's the bigger left-wing nut job. And it's the currency that's going to get, I think, that's going to get votes in the primaries. Now, I know that primaries, they always draw to the extreme ends of the party, and then there's a pivot. The thing is, that's beautiful for Trump is he's not going to have a real primary challenge. That's not happening. So he doesn't have to do that. The incumbent doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to go and persuade the party faithful of where he's at. And besides, Trump's already, made it clear he's brought a new party faithful in, and then they're far more politically engaged than some of these dying at the, living dead Republicans that have been part of the establishment machine for so many years. So this is just going to be fantastic to see how this plays out. And the debates are coming up in June. I think the first Democratic National Committee debate that's organized for the primaries is in June. And remember, right, this time 4 years ago, nobody thought there's a snowball's chance in hell that Trump was going to, get any traction. Nobody thought that everybody thought it was a Jeb Bush race, for Pete's sake. There were some crazy people out there, thinking that I don't know who were the other. But Jeb Bush was the 29, 30, 34. Rubio. Yeah. People are talking about Rubio and Cruz, I think, had some following and had some percentage points, and around June Trump had 1%, so he barely registered. And then he got up in the debates and blew everyone away, and up and away, and never looked back. And one of the things that it's going to take a candidate here. It's one little bit of prognosticating here from me. It'll take, because of the volume of candidates, so many candidates. Every day there's a new prospective new Democratic candidate for president. Somebody here is going to have to cut through a lot of noise, because in the debate, it's not like the people are going to have an opportunity to talk for a long time. They're going to get a minute or two to answer a question. You remember how this was? So for a guy like Trump, who's seasoned, who's honed, who's great at delivering zingers, punchlines, that was for him made in heaven. And Jeb Bush, if there was a fire, I think he would probably not remember the words to yell fire. It would take a paragraph to describe the fire and its general location and appearance and scent. Nonetheless, right? This is what I think led to Trump's very early success. So and is it going to be this Buttigieg guy? I don't know. He sounds good in commercials, but that doesn't mean he's going to be adept on a stage a crowded stage of some seasoned political operatives. Sam Rojofsky back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Okay, here's an example of how this Democratic primary is turning into a fun race to the farther extremes of left-wing lunacy. There was an event this week, Washington, D.C., We the People Summit. Now, a number of the candidates, the major candidates, including Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Beto was there, Elizabeth Warren. So they're all there. They're speaking. But the opening remarks at the event were done by Jamal Watkins from the NAACP. And here are his remarks.
My name is Jamal Watkins, and I proudly serve as the Vice President of Civic Engagement for the NAACP. Now, I came here not to talk at you. We're going to be here all day. It's going to be a long and powerful day. But I want you to do something with me. I'm going to actually have you participate with me in repeating some words from a leader by the name of Asada Shakur. So if you can stand up with me, if you can't stand, it's okay. But I want you to repeat after me. It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love each other and respect each other.
We must love each other and respect each other.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
This is sick. So, you know, this is a chant, a quote from Asada Shakur, the convicted cop killer. She killed a New Jersey trooper years ago, was arrested, convicted, and then fled, escaped, and went to Cuba, where, of course, you know, the regime there granted her asylum. President Obama put her on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, or most wanted terrorist list. First woman ever to make that list. So I guess, you know, that's her big contribution to feminism. This event, I guess the NAACP and their Asada Shakur loving ways were in good company, because Planned Parenthood was one of the sponsors, as was the SEIU. Oh, and the Sierra Club. I mean, look, cop killers, this, you know, maybe I'm missing something. But the more that the Democratic Party aligns themselves with this kind of radical extremism, the less traction they're going to get going after their precious independent voters. And also, let me point out the obvious. I mean, compared to this, and by the way, who sits at these events? You sit down and let's start with the chant. Hey, man. Makes a Republican sitting around praying like look like nothing. So anyway, they start with this chant. And doesn't this all make Trump look so moderate? I mean, if I was anybody important in the Democratic Party, my entire objective here would be to make Trump look like a loon, and for us on our side, for us to be the responsible center left statesman, right? And instead, they're starting their political rally with a chant by a radical Marxist who fled the state and even was called a terrorist by Barack Obama. So this is what I mean when I originally say that honestly, Joe Biden has found himself in a completely different Democratic Party than he was in 4 years ago. Had he run 4 years ago, friends, he would have, I think, won. He could have. He was a guy who could have taken on Trump and had the legitimacy following his stint with in the Obama administration, had legitimacy from that. But I think in the last 4 years, this is an exact product of Trump derangement syndrome, because Trump has, by virtue of taking out that flamethrower and fighting on every fight, it has made the Democrats go crazy. And when Democrats go crazy, they retreat to their extreme positions and they become triggered. And their true socialism comes out. It's a beautiful thing to watch, I tell you. And don't think it's not calculated, right? Don't think that Trump, you know, he knows exactly what he's doing. So, yes. Oh, the betting odds for Trump winning the U.S. presidency, 39.1%, up 2% in last week. And Sanders is only at 12%, and he's the next runner-up. So that's the betting odds that Trump's, yeah, so there it is. Sam Rejofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rejofsky. Now, what Sam
is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rojofsky here. Have you all heard about Bob Kraft's little problem over at the Jupiter, Jupiter, Florida, some little spa that he went to and may or may not have gotten intimate with one of the masseuses? Well, do you know how the police got the video? Because there's video, apparently, of the act, the services being rendered upon Mr. Kraft's. So do you know how they got the video? They called in a fake bomb threat. That's right. So the police, first they obtained a warrant. I'll back it up even more. The police received some sort of tip that there was some hanky-panky going on, a little more than just massages going on at the salon. So they had a health inspector go in just to kind of check things out on the behest of law enforcement. Right? So the cops get a health inspector from the city to come out, check it out. The health inspector sees a cot in the back room and a refrigerator stocked with food. And on that basis, the police went to a judge and got a warrant to surveil the place on the basis that they suspected human trafficking was going on. Now, why did they suspect? Well, because there's a cot in there. And of course, any place that has a cot and a refrigerator clearly is used for human trafficking. I don't think they've seen a law firm. You know, when lawyers at these big firms work 20-hour days or 18-hour days. Yeah, there are refrigerators stocked with food and there are couches and cots or whatnot in the break. Trust me, maybe that's human trafficking, too. But at any rate, so then after that, they still couldn't figure out how to surreptitiously get the cameras. And so they called in a fake bomb threat, got the spa to evacuate. No word on if any particular services were interrupted and in an opportune moment, but nonetheless got them to evacuate and went in quickly and put up the cameras. So that's how they did that. Now, this is going to result in the tape getting thrown out. This is my opinion, but I'm going to tell you there's two big problems here. The bigger problem is I think they basically got the judge to sign off on the warrant based on BS. And the judge is being told there's a human trafficking operation here. They only charge people with misdemeanors related to, you know, prostitution. Misdemeanors. And then they use this ruse of a bomb threat to go in. And those things like that are really only done in terrorism cases and some big, big criminal prosecutions with the mob and things like this thing's going to get thrown out. And Kraft's got good lawyers, right? You got to assume he's got a good legal team. So this is a classic local vice squad getting too big for their britches. And they think they caught themselves a big fish, and the big fish is going to hire the best lawyers out there, and I think they're going to get shown up. And I do think this is, at the end of the day, a good thing. You do not want the police overreaching on these types of cases. So, there it is. All right, when we come back, I want to get into this Mueller report release and just give you a little bit of a take and perspective on what this all means, what they're talking about. When we come back, Sam Rojofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Rojofsky here. Okay, this Mueller report, I'm going to get right into it because the issue is releasing the Mueller report to Congress and releasing the Mueller report to the public. And today, this morning on Capitol Hill, a House committee voted mostly along party lines to compel the Attorney General of the United States to turn over an unredacted full version of the special counsel's report. Now, look, I'm going to tell you, it's kind of principle first, a big picture. I of course, I want to see the report. It turns out it's not thousands of pages. It's only 300 pages. I don't know what Mueller clearly wasn't getting paid by the word. So it's not as lengthy as, for example, Ken Starr's report, which was boxes and boxes and boxes of material. But nonetheless, still, this report has in it frequent references, I assume perhaps even whole passages of transcripts from grand jury testimony. Now, I have to explain first a little bit because you've heard a lot about what this about this grand jury thing. What is a grand jury? By the way, we're only one of two countries in the world that uses a grand jury system. The other country is Liberia, in case you're wondering. So that's just something that you can impress people with at cocktail parties. But grand juries are used. It's a it's unlike a jury for a trial. What happens is and you can apply to be on one, but you're usually impaneled for about a year. And it has about 25 people on it. And they sit, you know, you meet there on a regular basis and you hear some testimony presented to you and then determine if charges are going to be filed against the person who is being who the prosecutor brings in and wants to have charged or not. Now, this system is something it's so unique and it's unique to the our American system. And it was designed to prevent prosecutors from being, I don't know, from malicious, well, protect you and I from malicious prosecution. I will tell you that functionally, that's not the case. Grand juries and the people that sit on them, grand jurors, are, I don't know, who has time to sit on a grand jury for a year and could be convened on a grand jury? I know who. Busybodies. Retired persons. People who like to judge and be important. And those are precisely the kind of losers that like to hang people. So I can think of many, many instances where a grand jury returns an indictment only for there to be a not guilty verdict down the road. But prosecutors like grand juries, even in states and counties that don't require a grand jury to provide an indictment, they like it because they can test out their evidence a little bit on a jury. They basically get to pre-try their case and see what evidence these jurors like and what evidence they don't like. Does that make sense? Very common. And also, it provides political cover. Well, my case is so strong. You can hear almost a, you know, a, I don't know, some attorney general somewhere or a chief prosecutor saying, oh, Mike, our case is so strong. The grand jury came back with an indictment and it sounds so official that it makes everybody get very excited about what law enforcement is doing. So that's what a grand jury is. Now, Congress, right? Congress in its investigative capacity, in its constitutionally defined mission to judge the president, right? Because the president, if he's going to be impeached, that is a trial that is held by Congress. The indictment is not presented to a grand jury. Who, do you know who gives the indictment? It's the House of Representatives. They choose to indict the president, yay or nay, and then the Senate sits in judgment for the trial. So every time you hear the Democrats say something along the lines of, well, you know, we're in our constitutionally defined role here of judging the president. We need to have the full report and blah, blah, blah. These bozos can do all the same investigating and have been doing all the same investigating and have called all the same witnesses that Mueller did. But there's one key difference here. And the key difference is that Congress is not entitled to the grand jury testimony. And I'll tell you why. It has to do with Rule 6 in the federal rules here of criminal procedure. Rule 6E. Now, the Rule 6 deals with all grand jury issues. But Section E deals with recording and here's the operative part, disclosing the proceedings. So we're not going to worry about recording the proceedings because there's a court reporter involved, blah, blah, blah. There's a transcript and whatnot. But disclosure's very strict according to the federal rules. And we are talking, by the way, here about a federal grand jury, okay? Now, in subsection 3A, disclosure of a grand jury matter other than the grand jury's deliberations or any grand juror's vote may be made to, and there is a very specific list. Now, here's something you got to know. Congress is not on the list. And I've asked about this because I've never practiced in this area of any kind of litigation involving Congress or, you know, I'm out of my wheelhouse a little bit, but I'm looking at the code and I've asked about this and the only relevant section that it would fall under is the exception would be any government personnel that an attorney for the government considers necessary to assist in performing that attorney's duty to enforce federal criminal law. Now, government personnel, yeah, that's Congress. Any congressman, obviously, by virtue of his position, is government personnel. But the Bob Mueller's done. He's not prosecuting anybody else. He's not recommending anybody else be prosecuted. He doesn't need any assistance from Congress to prosecute anybody. So I want you to understand and be clear that there is a lot of grand jury testimony here, and grand jury testimony is kept in very strict secrecy. And the reason is that if you testify before a grand jury, you're not even allowed to bring in your own attorney. It's very different from testifying in court or testifying in a deposition. The reason for this is the system of grand jury, they want people to be exceptionally candid and truthful, and they want everything. They just want to hear it all and make an informed decision based on that. And if you violate the secrecy of the grand jury, it stifles future efforts to conduct similarly effective hearings. The Democrats were all screaming to release this report. I'm with it. But Barr's saying, look, I just need to redact some things here that deal with grand jury. Give me a little bit of time. We got to go through it. And apparently Mueller's office is assisting in it. But that's not good enough for the Democrats. So today, in the committee led by Jerry Nadler, who is the congressman from the Upper East Side in New York, Upper West Side, excuse me, from New York City, from Manhattan, they gleefully passed this subpoena, forcing the attorney general to turn over this report. But the thing is you can't subpoena something that you're not allowed to by federal law to turn over. So what is this? Theatrics. It's politics. It's all it is. The Democrats they're not idiots, okay? They understand they have a losing argument. And by the way, the very same guy who's leading this effort was the guy that resisted this, right, back when he was in Congress and the Starr report came out. In fact, let's listen to what Jerry Nadler said then about the Starr report.
as a matter of decency and protecting people's privacy rights, people who may be totally innocent, third parties, what must not be released at all. It's grand jury material. It represents statements which may or may not be true by various witnesses, salacious material, all kinds of material that it would be unfair to release.
And that was in 1998. Today, Mr. Nadler, the honorable representative, Democrat from New York, is singing quite a different tune.
The important thing to say now is that the Mueller report, which was handed to the Attorney General, must be made public in its entirety. The American people deserve to know what was going on and the evidence against people or lack of evidence against people. And we are going to insist that the Attorney General make public the entire report.
Okay. I mean, it is literally the exact opposite of what he said back when it was Ken Starr and he was defending then-President Bill Clinton. I think one, I don't know, one advantage about it being an attorney, and when you study law, you look, the law is the law. And you don't... Obviously, there's a rule, and there are things we call it black letter law, which just means it's established, it's clear, it's just there, and it doesn't matter if you're a Republican, an independent, or a Democrat. It's the same black letter law, and it applies to all of us. And so this just really ticks me off because yes, I want to read the report. But at the same time, I want to make sure that I think we have a system of laws and we have a system of the way that we handle this stuff, and we need to follow it. Apparently, I will say this, in this entire fight over the report, there are some leaks, and again, we don't know if this is accurate, that apparently there's some damaging stuff in that Attorney General Barr's summary letter that he sent to Congress downplayed some truly terrible things that were alleged to be true. Now, I want to point out something, that in grand jury testimony, a lot of allegations are made. Well, in any kind of testimony, a lot of allegations are made. The first level of determination is the grand jury if they issue an indictment or not. And so I want to point something out. That's a low bar. I mean, that's a low standard. That's not a conviction standard. That's just, is there enough evidence to proceed to a trial, to have an indictment and to proceed to a trial? If there wasn't enough evidence to indict Don Jr., let alone try him, but just indict him, I don't think there's enough there. And I absolutely believe that Mueller had the political will to indict, for example, the son of the president. I don't believe for a minute, I don't care how much dancing the attorney general does about this report. I just don't see that if there wasn't an indictment, there really was nothing there. Everything I need to know about that report is evidenced by who was not indicted. So unless that report comes back and tells us, well, you know, aw, shucks, we had enough to indict, but we decided the last minute to pull it out of the grand jury's hands. I don't think Mueller did that. I think Mueller came into this motivated, desperate even, to get a big scalp. And all he got was, you know, incidental roadkill. It's all he picked off at the end of the day. I mean, really? Roger Stone? He didn't even get Roger Stone. He tried to get Corsi. Didn't get him. He got tax evasion, right? He got the guy who was Trump's campaign manager for a hot minute. It's just the whole thing from top to bottom was a big dud. And so there's a number of real inconsistent positions on this, and it just bothers me. So how do I see this playing out? ultimately a redacted report is going to be made public. The publicly released one is going to be heavily redacted. And Congress is going to get some version of the report. But by the way, Congress, it's also a political setup because Congress, they can subpoena Bob Mueller. They can bring the special counsel in and ask him the question, well, what was the evidence? What can you tell us? But that's not sexy. That doesn't sell. They want to beat their drums here that there's, you know, there's still something there. And I think politically, this is a dead end street. Because the more that they keep fighting and wanting to believe that there's something here and these incidental headlines that pop up every few days, there's something bad in there. We're still hoping against hope. It just sets them up for looking that much sillier, that much closer to the election. Both things not good for the Democratic Party. All right. I have a funny story. I'll wrap up with that here. There's with the immigration debate raging about whether to close the border, there's going to be some victims out there of this. And I'll explain who those victims are. You may know a few of them, actually, quite well. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Okay, if Trump closes the border, who gets affected by that? Well, there's a lot of trade that isn't going to happen. Companies, I know the Commerce Department and all the various pro-business groups are all freaking out about this. But I'm going to tell you that for all of the people in your life that cannot live without avocado toast, they are going to be crying tears of what is it? No, it's not keto. It wouldn't be keto if you're doing avocado toast. It is? Not the toast. Chicharrones, you put it on that? That sounds awful. Okay, so you put it on some chicharrones. Well, whatever. You know, all the shishi places have avocado toast. And you see, you know, the skinny gals that are, you know, delicately eating it with their manicured fingers. All right. Listen to this montage and laugh.
The U.S., listen to this, would run out of avocados in 3 weeks if President Trump shuts down the border with Mexico.
There's a lot of headlines about avocados. NBC News is reporting that nearly half of all imported U.S. vegetables and 40% of imported fruit are grown in Mexico, according to the latest data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and that it would be 3 weeks before avocados run out in this country.
The move could be particularly tough for you avocado lovers out there. Mexico supplies almost all of the avocados in the United States during the winter. The United States would run out of avocados in 3 weeks if the border were closed.
All right. That's it. Because, you know, we get most of our avocados from Mexico, and we like our guacamole, and we like our avocado toast. And you know I eat avocados almost every day. So for me, I better start stocking up. Well, yeah, Jeb, right? Yeah, with his guacamole. Well, if you're a newcomer to the show, you know that the Jeb Bush campaign store was selling a Jeb labeled guacamole bowl called a guacamole, and that did not help him win the nomination for president. So what do I make of this? Well, I think they finally landed an anti-Trump punch. The media has finally got my attention, because if Trump closes the border, I don't have my avocados, I'm going to lose my mind. Just kidding. No, I don't know. We'll talk more about the situation at the border next show. But I tell you, this is so funny. Now they've They've tried everything they possibly can to convince people how awful Trump is. And I think they're genuinely surprised that his approval rating, his approval rating is at 50%, even though they've been literally tying the president to locking children in cages. And it hasn't moved the needle. So you can just picture them getting together in the newsroom saying, how are we going to get the public's attention? Oh, I know. Avocados are gonna disappear. Might work. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back again next week. All right, have a great weekend. Over and out.